Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Create a brighter future with a savings plan from Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
The Taoiseach Micheál Martin was in Belfast today for talks with all the main parties, but after meeting Geoffrey Donaldson, the DUP leader said that his party won't re-enter Stormont until the protocol is replaced. So has there been progress or is it more deadlock? Well, for more on this, we're joined now by Peter Burke, who is Minister of State for European Affairs and Defence. And you're welcome, Peter, to the programme this evening. As I say, the Taoiseach in Belfast today, Geoffrey Donaldson saying the party won't re-enter Stormont until the protocol is replaced. Looks like we're right back where we started, are we?
I don't think so. I think in the first instance there, it's very important that the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach keep engaging with the five parties in Northern Ireland, and they've been doing that over the last number of weeks as negotiations intensify with Vice President Šefčovič and the Commission and the UK. And obviously, I know the EU are very, very much aware in terms of the concerns that the unions have in Northern Ireland in relation to the protocol. And we have to try and find and uncover that flexibility within the protocol to try and resolve the concerns that they have raised. And I think in the process, and I know that both sides are very much aware of this, and hopefully we can get a resolution that will allow the Northern Ireland institutions get back up to working for the people of Northern Ireland, which they so desire and need.
But one thing that I think we know won't happen is that the protocol isn't going to be replaced. Or am I wrong about that? Because my understanding was that would require a reopening of the entire withdrawal agreement document, and that was never going to happen.
No, absolutely. It won't be replaced. And what we're looking at is the operability of the protocol. And what I mentioned before on your show around 2 weeks ago is that in relation to the agreement that was got in relation to data sharing, I think that has given the EU27 a high degree of confidence in terms of the profile of goods that come into Northern Ireland. And what happens then is when they can see the IT systems, get a profile of those goods, that hopefully will give more flexibility. So we're looking at how we operate the protocol, what flexibility can be built into it to try and respond to the concerns of unionism.
So, but you can see then how Geoffrey Donaldson continues to paint himself into a corner. If you're quite clear, and the EU has been quite clear the entire way along, and you're confirming that to us again now today, the protocol will not be replaced. He's saying the protocol must be replaced. So even if the operation of the protocol is different, if it's still a protocol, it's still a protocol. Or do you think that it could be simply called something different, operate differently, and that will be enough for Geoffrey Donaldson to get over the line?
Well, in the first instance, it is a signed agreement. The agreement is not going to change. In terms of how you operate the protocol, it's where flexibility may be able to be permitted. And obviously, that's where we are in the negotiation process now. It's obviously a highly confidential process because there are significant pressures on both sides to try and get it resolved. We have a unique window now to try and resolve these issues. And obviously, if we can get agreement that will bring the Northern Ireland institutions back up, that would be so, so helpful. Mm. But I would have a significant degree of hope still that we can do that. And I think that's why you have so many high-level negotiations and work going on with the EU and UK. And also, as I said, you know, the highest level of our own government meeting with Northern Ireland Parliament,
Which
is so important.
Because it's not just helpful that the institution gets it back up and running. It's necessary. It's absolutely necessary for the people of Northern Ireland. The ECJ and the role of the ECJ appears to be one of the big sticking points that remains, because I know, as you say, there appears to have been a lot of progress in terms of trading and trying to reduce the number of checks to as much of an extent as possible. But it still seems that the ECJ is right there in the middle of it, with the DUP saying that they don't want the ECJ having any jurisdiction over what's going on in Northern Ireland, and the EU saying the ECJ has to have jurisdiction on certain aspects of what goes on in Northern Ireland.
Well, in the first instance, you have a number of challenges, not only with the ECJ, but also still in terms of trade, in terms of the various different mechanisms to allow goods and services access straight into the Northern Ireland from the UK quicker. But I don't want to go into the real technical issues in terms of either the ECJ or in relation to the various different mechanisms that can be employed, because those are the items that they have asked for space around in terms of the EU and the UK as they go about their negotiations. And by me saying something,
and what does that mean, Peter? Does
that
mean when you're saying they're asking for space around it, that suggests there might be some movement around it then?
I think we are on a positive trajectory. And obviously, in terms of, as I said, the agreement a few weeks ago, it does give some space in relation to that. But obviously, we are absolutely taking nothing for granted. We have seen so many false dawns in the past in terms of even when agreements were got over the line and then subsequently were resiled from. But I think we have trust has been rebuilt substantially in relation to that agreement, in relation to data sharing. That has helped the process. And I'll be hopeful that we are making significant progress. And obviously, I'm going out to Brussels on Monday and to the General Affairs Council, and we get an update from Vice President Šeškovič in relation to the negotiations at that point. And I'll be hopeful that with that positive momentum that it does continue over the next few weeks.
A year now for Northern Ireland with Outstormont functioning. Michelle O'Neill from Sinn Féin saying today that the DUP are punishing the public of Northern Ireland by their refusal to take part. Is she right?
Well, as I'm always very clear in my position, I don't want to engage in incendiary language. My viewpoint is trying to work with all the parties in Northern Ireland to try and get the institutions back up, delivering for the people of Northern Ireland. What I am very clear is that the vast majority, if not all of the people in Northern Ireland, want, need and desire to have their government up and delivering for them, because there is so many issues that they have to respond to, like down here.
Okay. I want to ask you about OMA, because yesterday Northern Ireland Secretary Chris Heaton-Harris announced there'd be an independent inquiry into that bombing in 1998. Do you think there's an onus now in the Irish government to establish a parallel process here?
Well, the first thing the Irish government has to do is to look and get sight of the terms of reference that are going to be from this decision. And once we see the terms of reference, we'll see in terms of what needs to happen. Do we need an inquiry, or can we transfer documentation like we have in the past with other inquiries? We did put that into primary legislation before for a number of inquiries like King's Mill in terms of giving significant documentation and in a transparent manner over and back. And we will cooperate fully with it. So Minister Harris now is going to look at, when he sees the terms of reference, update Cabinet colleagues and see what mechanism needs to be established for our government to cooperate fully with this inquiry.
Because Geoffrey Johnson, again, after meeting with the Taoiseach, said he believed the Republic of Ireland should hold a similar process in parallel with the one in the UK, because preparation for the bombing was done south of the border. That does make sense, doesn't it? And we were speaking to Nuala O'Loane, the former police ombudsman for Northern Ireland, yesterday, and she was saying she had also been calling for an inquiry into this, and only a limited inquiry was set up by the Irish government in the past.
You know, I would preface that by, you would need to see the terms of reference, Sarah, rather than me giving a determination now with all the information not available to me.
Okay, so what are you looking for in the terms of reference? Is the judgment that if the terms of reference are wide enough in the UK inquiry, there may be a judgment made by the Irish government, there's no need for us to hold a parallel process?
You need to see a number of things in terms of what way discretion works in terms of the chairman for meetings being in public inquiries. Are people compelled to, what way the inquiry is going to work? And in terms of the legislation that we already have passed here for previous inquiries, is it going to be enough for us to share data with and files with Northern Ireland, with the UK, shall I say, instead of setting up an inquiry? But if we need to set up a public an inquiry to mirror it, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't.
All right, I want to ask you briefly then, Minister, about accommodation for refugees. And we saw that letter published today that was sent out by Roderick O'Gorman, the Minister for Integration, to all government departments, looking urgently for basically anything that he can get to try and give people who are coming into this country accommodation. I have to say, the letter struck me as a government in panic mode, because if there was the cross-departmental cooperation that we've been told there is, where everyone is pulling their weight and there's lots of communication going on at the highest level of government between every government department, there would be no need for this letter.
I don't agree, because if you really look at the facts here, what the state is trying to do is trying to respond to a wartime effort. This should be judged through the prism of a wartime response. This is the biggest humanitarian effort Ireland has ever to grapple with. And if you look at the facts, Sarah, if you go back to last January, there was about 7,250 people in international protection applicants in this state. Now between those and Ukrainian citizens, we've almost 90,000.
Sure, no one is underestimating the scale of the challenge. I'm asking about how we're coping with it. And what I'm putting to you is that we're told that there is cross-departmental cooperation, that all the departments are working together, ministers are talking to each other, they're all working together. If that was happening, why would Roderick O'Gorman have to write to his fellow ministers urgently seeking accommodation?
How are we cooperating or coping with it? We provided 14,000 school places. We have, through our Irish citizens, provided 6,500 people in homes right around the country by the Irish people. We've signed 700 accommodation contracts for 41,000 beds in our hotels. We have numerous efforts right across the state through our community call, responding to local authorities, trying to get older buildings back into use to provide accommodation in an emergency effort. So those are the facts in terms of how the state has responded to accommodate almost 90,000 people under both codes, which is an extraordinary effort by
it
so
is.
Many
no,
people.
I think a lot of people will agree with that. You know, what has been done in terms of trying to find accommodation for 90,000 people has been great, you know, and I know there's a lot of people working very hard behind the scenes to try and make that happen. But now we're being told there's going to be 180,000 by the end of the year, double the number that we have. And at 90,000, we have the Minister for Integration looking for vacant school halls to put people in sleeping bags. So what happens when the next 10,000 come and the 10,000 after that? What is the plan for this year to try and deal with what's coming?
Well, we have to try and do more. That's exactly what we're doing. And that's why you can see in terms of the response that we have our gov.ie call for offering homes in the public. We've doubled the response fee for that to try and assist people, and also in terms of a rapid build that we have a number of projects now on site aiming to deliver 700 units by
I know, Minister, and that's going to house 2,000 people, you know, like, and a great, that again, that's welcome, but it's going to house 2,000.
Absolutely, they are welcome, you're dead right.
Yeah, but it's going to house 2,000, it's going to house 2,000 people and with 90,000 coming.
And as I said, there are other areas in terms of trying to get derelict buildings back, like the correspondence that Minister O'Gorman has had, and also going through more responses from the citizens of our country who have made huge sacrifices and given places for Ukrainian citizens.
Well, they have, and indeed on that point we got a text, as we always do when we discuss this, from listeners talking about how they've tried to offer accommodation, and this person mentioned it was a house in Donegal, it was inspected and approved in September, and you know, months and months later got another email today wondering if they were still interested in giving up that that property. And we were speaking to Liam O'Dwyer from the Red Cross earlier on, and he was saying there's quite a number of commercial advisors, providers that have been in contact with him. Huge amount of frustration there, he said, because quite a number of them were on the phone to him today, having seen this letter from Minister Roderick O'Gorman, saying they sent in their offers of accommodation to the department, you know, over the last couple of weeks or months, and they haven't heard back yet.
Well, the state is working through those applications, Sarah, and there has been a huge amount of applications in. But we have to stress test those applications in terms of building regulations, how they comply and how suitable they are. But also they have to have a range of services for people who are coming in to ensure that they get the best possible looking after that we can. But I would remind everyone that, as I said, we've catered for 90,000 people.
Yeah.
At the moment, we have a potential 350 international protection applicants coming in through our airport every single week, and also in terms of Ukrainian citizens, potentially over 1,000 per week. So we're trying to respond to the greatest humanitarian crisis Ireland has ever faced in terms of accommodating such a large scale of individuals who are very vulnerable.
And you think it's okay that there will be some offers of accommodation not inspected after months?
I don't. The state is trying to do everything it can, Sarah, in terms of getting back to people as quickly as it can. There's been a huge amount of offers, but the state has an obligation to ensure that those offers, you know, are to the required standard to ensure that they can house.
Well, God Almighty, do they, Peter? Because what you've ended up with now is a call from the minister to put sleeping bags on the floor of a school hall.
Well,
you know, that's the standard of accommodation we've ended up with.
They have to meet the building regulations in terms of fire and safety. That has to be done in the first instance through our local authorities. But we are responding as quickly as we can. And as I said, I would just ask our listeners to judge it through the prism of a wartime response. This is an incredible thing the state is trying to do. 90,000 people, 14,000 school places. I went through all the other metrics in terms of how the state has procured contracts, etc., to respond to this.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us, Minister Peter Burke.